Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear me, David?
Hey, I can hear you, Bruce.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Michael. How you doing, Bruce?
All right, Michael. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm good. Who else is on the call here with us?
I don't know. You and I.
It'd probably be the best show they ever had, just me and you.
We can carry the show.
Oh, without a doubt, you and I can carry the show.
That's right. I don't even hear
so
David.
He just texted me, and I don't know. Yeah, I just got a text from him, but I think we're live now.
He's out west with you.
Yeah, he's out here in California. He's in Los Angeles. He had to go to a wedding, he said.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he went to a wedding out here in L.A.
You
so.
Think we're on the air? I don't know.
I mean, I think so, but either or, if we're not, I'm glad you're here, Bruce, because I did want to ask you, what do you think, what are your thoughts on this Donald Trump and the DA from New York rags? So I'm trying to get him in there.
Okay, can you guys hear me now?
Yes,
oh,
we can hear you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I just dialed in with my phone because the computer I'm on obviously is not taking my voice. But
okay.
You guys were doing good, so go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Michael and I can carry the show if you want to go do something else.
Yeah, hey, David, I asked him, I want to know how does he feel about Donald Trump getting indicted for the Stormy Daniels thing right now. Like, it looks like that's coming down the pike real soon, Bruce.
Well, you're right. It's another show element. One side says he thinks he's embracing it and encouraging it to happen so he can use it as some kind of marketing ploy, and the other says that is it Bragg, Mr. Bragg, that it's falling apart on him and some of the people that in his own office are saying this is too weak a case or you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. So my whole point in that is one side says it's going to happen, another side said it doesn't, and who knows which one is going to show up.
Yeah, do you think they're all working together, Bruce? Do you think the DA from New York, the DA from Georgia, the Department of Justice, do you think they're all working together on this?
Well,
of course.
Whoever wants to get Trump, no matter if they're on the left somewhere and want to get him, they're going to work together. You know that. I mean, they're going to coordinate it somehow if it's on the left. If there's other people on the right that are involved, I don't know if that's the case. But anybody on the left, yeah, they're working together.
Darius, I see you're on. What are your comments about what you're talking about?
Hey, guys. First of all, I want to say hello to Michael, man. I'm glad you're back, brother. Hope all is
good. Hey, Darius, good. Thank you, man. Everything's good. Thanks, Darius.
Good. I believe he's going to get indicted by somebody. But, you know, I think everybody, I've listened to a lot of legal experts, and I haven't heard anyone say that any of these indictments will, there's a possibility that it'll lead to a conviction. You know, what they want is the mugshot. Somebody needs to mute. I think I hear somebody has their radio on or background noise or something. But anyway, at any rate, they'll probably get the indictment that they want. But I hear that Bragg's case is falling apart because he was supposed to do the indictment this week. And, you know, some of the people on the grand jury are struggling coming to terms with issuing the indictment. And this case would have more legs had it not been that this is coming from an attorney general, a DA, that reduces 50%, over 50% of all cases, he's reduced from felonies to misdemeanors. But this one case in particular, he wants to take from a misdemeanor to a felony. Go figure. This guy is going to make himself a laughingstock. He'll never be taken seriously again. This guy is, I think he's had like over 17 assistant DAs resign from office since he's been in office because of you know, his lack of ability to take crime seriously, but yet he wants to get Donald Trump because he believes somehow this is going to put some kind of notch on his belt. So, yeah, I back to what you said about working together, I'm with David. I do believe that they're all working together because they want to get him. You know, the Attorney General of New York, I think, what's her name? Michael, the one who, the Attorney General there?
Letitia James,
right. So she tried to get him too. And the most she could come up with was a civil suit. So, I mean, these guys are, all they're doing is ensuring that Donald Trump will win the nomination and win the election if they continue to go after him like this.
Well, on top of that, guys, did you hear the latest? Not only is he trying to take a state, he's a state qualified level. He's trying to turn it into a federal thing. That's another strike against him. And the thing I heard this morning, that the somewhere on the internet that they've got pictures, series of pictures showing Trump being arrested and hauled off. And, you know, that's, you know, I don't even think the Republicans would do that of Biden, although I'm sure they've been tempted too. But, you know, that's the age of IT now. They're going to create things that can overdo voices now to make it sound like you're actually saying something you're not. And now they're doing these pictures. That's taking it above and beyond where it should be, I think.
Hey, Bruce, you're joking when you said you don't think the Republicans would do a perp walk on a Democrat. You really don't think they would have done this to Barack Obama if they would have found any piece of little dirt on him?
Well, yeah. If you think they would have, why didn't they? Because there's dirt out there. So, you know, the aspect, and I think we're in a different level of mindset now, Michael, where there's no holes barred. Whatever you can figure out on your opponent to make them look worse or smear or dirty or whatever term you want to use on both sides, they're both starting to play that game, and that's an ugly game neither side should be playing.
I think they did try with Obama with his birth certificate. The only problem is it was only his birth certificate. That was the only thing they could come up with. They weren't to the level that Donald Trump is in terms of trouble.
Yeah.
Well, you know, David, we've got far more evidence of a reason to indict and perp walk Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and his brother. And I mean, so to say that Republicans would do it, I mean, they've got cause right now. You know, they had cause back then. So, you know, I don't think that's the case. But like
but
I said, there's
the cause
far
is not
more
political, and it's not judicial as the Trump is. They're looking for, they've been trying to come up with a reason to prosecute both Biden and his son, but they can't come up with anything because it's not judicial as Trump is.
Are you serious, David?
Yeah, I can't believe you said that.
They took money from foreign countries, adversaries. Are you serious right now? You said it's not judicial.
You got to have
proof
it was outside of the law. They don't have proof that it was outside of the law.
Mm.
They're working on the first $1 million that was distributed to the ex-wife, to the brother. Forgive me for not spouting out the names, and to Hunter. So that one's being done on right now, and they said they have, it's either 9 or 11 other cases they're working on right now. So there's going to be plenty of ammunition, and there's already some being brought out. But there again, you have the press, the general press, not all the press, but the general mainline press, that won't even talk about it. The only one that will are the conservative stations. So if it's not in people's minds and not in front of them, they don't think it exists. So that's a big advantage for the left. Doesn't make it right, doesn't make it legal, but it makes it to their advantage.
Hey, Bruce and Darius, can
you
guys?
You got over 150 suspicious activity reports from the bank. This isn't partisan. This is directly from the bank on the Biden, where money has been distributed from foreign adversaries, and they have no accountability as to why they received those funds. There's
That's
nothing
right.
there. And when you ask the White House about it, they say, oh, it's lies. Well, the banks don't lie when they issue suspicious activity. So, you know, I don't know how you argue that point.
Hey, Bruce and Darius, I want to ask both of you guys. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, David. Sorry.
No, the problem is I was going to say we started off political again. Let's
yeah.
see if we could bypass that a little bit.
Michael, you would have been proud of us the last two or three times we haven't had any political.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Is right. Wow.
I have some questions that some of our listeners wanting to ask, but let me do this. Darius, what do you want to bring to the table? Of course, I know it's going to be political. But anyway, would you like to bring to the table? Can you do something non-political?
Non-political. okay, I'm going to say this is not political. There was a law that was passed, and this is not part of it. There was a law that was passed by Congress this week, and the law said that they'll issue a parent's bill of rights so that parents will have full knowledge of the curriculum that's being taught in the schools, public schools, to their children. And you cannot refer to a child by another gender or without consulting the parents. They'll also be aware of the books that they have in their libraries and what they're assigned to read and study. And you got a lot of pushback from the teachers union. But the Congress went ahead and passed that bill anyway, with the resistance from the teachers union and a lot of Democrats as well, but you know, nonpartisan question. And the question is, do you guys think that parents should have the right to know what's being taught to their kids and to know what the agenda is for from the teachers union?
Michael, you want to take up on that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thanks for calling me, David. Yeah, Darius, I'm kind of in agreement with you on this one. I do think that parents should be notified as to what their kids are being taught in school, but I also don't want my kids, or any kid for that matter, to be taught a fake history. If you're going to teach us things in school, teach us facts. I don't want to be taught sugar-coated stories on American history. I want you to tell me the facts about American history. And also, I don't want just a group of, and I don't want to make it political, but I don't want just a group of white men sitting in the room saying what the children of America should learn in their curriculum. I want everyone to have a voice into what should be taught to our children. But to answer your question in short, yeah, I think it would be great for parents to have a voice in what their children are taught in school, for sure.
Mr. Solutions, welcome to the show. Okay.
Yeah, hi, Dave.
Can I add to that?
Yes, Bruce, what were your thoughts on that?
I also agree with Darius and Michael. And Michael, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. Whoever was involved in the past, if it was all white guys or whatever, today, the history should be real, shouldn't be slanted, shouldn't be sugar-coated. It doesn't have to be so graphic that we scare little kids out of their seats, but it needs to convey the realness of all the history, not just the bad, not just the good, all of it. And we keep getting stuck and go back and forth on whether I don't think too many people now on either side would disagree if they handled it right in teaching all the history. And the big thing with, say, for example, with Florida and with DeSantis is he's not objecting to that either. He's just saying there's an appropriate time and place to do it. You can debate on who should be involved, and I think that should be an open and free debate to have the right people involved in the teaching, creating the teaching curricula and delivering it, and that should be void of one race or another. It should be everybody that can properly pull this all together and teach our children all the history, the complete history.
Okay, Darius, Mr. Solutions just showed up, and I don't think he heard the question. Can you repeat it to him again, and then I would like to get his response.
Yeah, they were passing, in light of what's happened during COVID, when a lot of parents got aware of what was being taught in the classrooms, and we also saw what happened in Virginia as well as Florida, where parents did not want their kids being taught gender affirmation or being taught sexual preferences. They didn't want their kids being taught that, and the federal government actually labeled them as terrorists when they showed up at school board meetings. And so there was a debate about students, about teachers saying that they do not have to consult with the parents on what they teach in schools. Well, Congress just passed a law last week called the Parents' Bill of Rights, which says that the parents should be fully informed about the curriculum that's being taught in schools, fully informed about the types of book assignments and books that their kids are being exposed to and having to read. And there's a lot of pushback against from the Teachers Association. So I just wanted to know what everybody's thoughts were, and should parents be allowed to be fully involved and knowledgeable about what's being taught in schools?
Mr. Solutions, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you, David, and hello, everyone. Yeah, I definitely this is an excellent topic, and parents are the primary educators of their children, so absolutely they should have a say. And I have been involved in that, not as a parent, but certainly as a, you know, as a mentor. And parents, they have to, because you get into the personal and the religious. And so, yeah, parents should be able to monitor that. I was thinking about the PTA, Parent Teachers Association, and but parents should definitely have a say. I mean, I don't see how anyone otherwise could say that they shouldn't. And I'm glad Congress passed that particular bill. I heard snips and pieces of it, but I think definitely parents have to have a say-so, sure.
All right. Okay, Michael, what would you like to bring to the table?
Hey, thanks for calling on me, David. I want to talk about the topic of, right here in my state of California, the city of San Francisco, just the Board of Supervisors passed an ordinance where they said they're going to examine giving reparations to African Americans. And what they came up with is a $5 million number of free housing. They came up with an astronomical number, and I'm for reparations, absolutely, but I think the number they came up with is just too far-fetched. And I was watching, they were debating this on CNN, and they asked a Republican strategist, they said, okay, the number is too far-fetched. What's the number that would make sense to you, Mr. Republican? And the Republican said zero. He said they, black people, African-Americans should get zero. So I want to throw it to the panel to see the reparations debate is definitely heating up. I want to start with you, Bruce, to see what are your thoughts. And just a basic question. Do you think the number is zero as to what African-Americans are owed in this country for reparations?
Well, zero implies that the only fair reparations is money. So I disagree with that to begin with. I don't disagree with the premise that if we, meaning all of us in unison, not one race or another, not one Republican or Democrat side, but if we can come up with something that is truly something that would be fair to people that have been that need reparations, so be it. And I agree with you. I mean, just an astronomical number, whether you agree with it or not, it's never going to fly. And all it's going to do is divide people and make it even a worse situation. So having the discussion, truly helping people, in essence, helping people that really need to be helped. Yes, I'm not against that at all. And it still comes down to, it can't be a left or a right side issue, a black or a white or a minority, a majority issue, whoever those people are these days. It needs to be a joint issue of people coming together and coming up with something that is fair and appropriate for those that truly need that. And do I have the answer? No. That's why we need people that can come up with that. But I don't think zero from the standpoint of nothing, no way, any way. There's a lot of benefits that have already been. Look at yourself, Michael. You've been very successful. I don't know if you feel you should get reparations or not. I don't know that. I'm not saying that either way. But there's many, many success stories in every race, in every creed, every color, every nationality, all over the country. So, and there were also a lot of people, if you're going to relate it to slavery, that bought and traded slavery other than the Caucasian group back then. There were African Americans that bought and sold slavery. So do some of the white families that were involved in that, do they get reparations? It's just a very complicated situation, and there is no simple answer.
Well, Bruce, just so I'm hearing you right, but you're not saying the number is zero. You are saying that there is a number that needs to be addressed.
As long as you don't equate it just to money, that it should be something that's – and I don't know what that is, Michael, but we always seem to equate everything that – well, give me some money. The money, no matter what it was, even if it was that ridiculous amount, wouldn't solve anything. Wouldn't solve a problem, wouldn't change an attitude. It would just be a handout, a subsidy.
Okay, Darius, is that number zero to you?
It depends on who
yeah,
you're
sorry.
Asking it.
Darius, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
My mic went out. So.
Okay. Yeah, it depends on who you're asking it from. You know, from the state of California, the irony in that is California was never a slave state. So what should California pay? The answer is zero. If it's coming from the United States of America, I still say zero. The thing is, why it's so convoluted, Michael, and so complicated is, you know, first of all, like Bruce said, there were blacks that owned slaves as well. There were some blacks who were never slaves. There were blacks who came over here that were never enslaved. So should they get reparations? Then you have whites who actually helped to abolish slavery. There wouldn't have been, you know, I think David and I talked about this briefly last week. There would not have been an abolitionist movement without the whites. America fought and destroyed and tore itself apart to end slavery, to abolish slavery. So is America guilty as a whole? I don't know. Is there something owed? I think if you can prove that you grew up, I mean, that your ancestors were on a plantation and that plantation owner benefited from the labor of your ancestors, and you can prove a direct lineage, then your family is owed something if there is something there. But you guys got to remember, there were very few slave owners in the South in America. Only the richest of the rich owned slaves. Not everybody had slaves. And from that percentage of people who did own slaves, after Reconstruction, a lot of them went broke. They lost everything because they couldn't afford to run their plantations. I mean, some of them went on to do like the land leases and things like that. But ultimately, there isn't any generational wealth, a whole lot of generational wealth that was acquired from the slavery revolution or whatever you want to call it, derived from slavery. So it's really convoluted, Michael. And I said, if you can prove directly that your family was enslaved and this family is powerful and rich now and your family worked for free, then yes, sure, something is owed to those people. How you prove that is the challenge, though.
All right, Mr. Solutions, what are your thoughts on this subject?
Oh, wow. This again, very interesting topic. I think Bruce really covered the high points of it. I've looked into this. I would say basically I'm against it, but I would also say the government did play a role in the perpetuating certainly the Jim Crow laws and this kind of thing. I look at the American Indians who have a great reparation package, as it were, and they've been enforcing treaties that were 100 years old that were violated. So I think that obviously some study needs to be done into it, some in-depth study. There are great opportunities in America. So I would generally say no. But again, the Civil War, from my understanding, was not fought over slavery. That was about states' rights. And slavery was tangential. And I believe Abraham Lincoln was quoted as saying he preferred that the dominant group of people, I don't want to say race because everybody is of the same race, but he was for the dominant group at that particular time, Europeans, to be in power. But I think it needs to be given some analysis, in-depth analysis, and not just money hand. And I don't think it should be just money, because I would just draw you gentlemen's attention to people who win the lottery, and oftentimes it doesn't end well for them simply because they're not accustomed to having a large sum of money. And it ends up destroying them, actually. So, yeah, but I think Bruce, again, covered it well.
All right. So, you know, we talked about history and teaching history and the true history of the United States, which included Native Americans, African Americans, et cetera. And we didn't really come to a great agreement on that response, but the fact that Darius said California was never a slave state makes me go back to that, because if you ask the Asians that California, Nevada, and all those things were slave states during the time when railroads needed to be built. So I think we need to really teach American history the way it actually happened. What do you want to say to that, Darius?
We were talking about reparations for African Americans. So we did have that, but it wasn't the
same.
That's
true, but shouldn't Asian Americans get it if they were slaves also?
If they were slaves, and like, you know, everything I said earlier applies. If you can prove that you worked for a family or a company that and you have a direct lineage, and you can prove that that company profited and is still profiting now to this day based on the infrastructure of slavery, then, yeah, absolutely they should get it if you can prove that. But I want to challenge you on that, David. California was not a slave state. Now, did it happen there? Yeah, sure. Like we talked about the railroads last week and we talked about the Asians, but it wasn't a slave state. Black people moved to California because it was a free state. But also, too, I wanted to challenge Solution on the fact that it was that the Civil War was not fought over slavery. It absolutely was. States' rights is what it was called, but it was triggered because of slavery. And states wanted the right to be able to choose their own laws. But it definitely was triggered by slavery. And if you doubt that, you need to read Frederick Douglass's book on how he spoke with Abraham Lincoln and their conversations that actually led to the Civil War. So it was absolutely, this revisionist history, but it was absolutely fought over slavery. That was the propelling issue.
Yeah, and to piggyback off of that real quick, Darius, you're absolutely right. Mr. Solution, you're wrong. And I hear a lot of people say that the Civil War was not about slavery when it was absolutely about slavery. But that's an example of what we started this conversation with, about how we need to teach the proper history. Historically, like we said, Bruce, when the white man was putting together the curriculum, he wanted us all to think it wasn't about slavery. So it goes back to what we said in the beginning. Who's teaching the kids? Go ahead.
Michael, I would push back a little bit. You're right. It was probably not taught on the level and in all facets that it should. I'll agree with you on that. But it was taught. It was talked, as Darius said, one of the main reasons, whether you want to debate whether it was the only reason, that we had the Civil War and we had such strife within our own country was over slavery. So let me phrase it this way. It was not a complete and thorough history the way it should have been about how slavery interacted in the starting and the growth of this country. Yeah, I would agree with that statement. But you get the impression, and then I'll be quiet. You get the impression with the news and that not just us talking here, that right and wrong is in teaching history is that the slavery part of it, none of it was taught near enough. And there's a lot of things that were not taught near enough. It wasn't just slavery. And complete history has to be involved in all aspects, including slavery.
Right. If I just may chime in briefly, since I was kind of castigated, what I would say is, look, as most wars are fought, it's over economics and some form of wealth or resources. And what was happening in gist is that the South was outpacing the North economically. And, of course, obviously they had not free labor, but cheaper labor. And thus, they wanted to hang on to that. And so, sure, slavery was involved, but I would say if you really, get down to the bare knuckles of it, it was economics.
All right.
Sorry, but when you say cheaper labor, no, it wasn't cheaper. It was free labor. That's another.
No, it wasn't free.
No, it was free labor. They were working for free. They weren't cheaper. It was free.
Well,
labor.
Wait a minute, sir. Wait a minute. You got to understand, slaves had to be cared for, and slaves were expensive.
Solution. They were getting free sex and free labor. That's what they were getting. And they didn't want to give up their free sex and their free labor. They were raping the women and forcing the men to work for free. That's the part of history they don't want to tell. They don't want to tell that harsh reality of it. They didn't want to give up all that.
I'm not disagreeing with you there, but several things can be true simultaneously. And what I'm saying is, if you look at the cost of a slave, slaves were expensive. And by the way, they're buying and selling slaves right now out of Africa. I understand that Chad is still allowing slavery to occur. But slaves were expensive, and slaves had to be cared for. So the labor wasn't free. It was cheaper, but it wasn't free.
All right. Let's move on. Bruce, what did you want to bring to the table this week?
Oh, thanks for asking me. This is kind of political. I guess it is. I wanted to bring up again the business about, because I just saw in my newspaper today, and I pulled the article out, Florida's Don't Say Gay bill pushed and copied. The reason I want to bring that up, it makes my blood boil a little bit, or gets me irritated when the left continues to use tags and phrases and so forth that just isn't true. The bill that DeSantis used, along, I think you brought it up, Michael, and Darius did, about education, is there's an appropriate time and place for certain kinds of education. And the bill, in its basicness, wanted that to happen, does want that to happen, and why it was passed. It did not say, don't say gay, meaning, oh, they're against gay people. That's not it at all. That's not fair, but they use it because it riles people up, it gets them upset, and it serves the narrative of a message that is not right. I will not stand here and say the right doesn't play games like that too, but when it tends to be mostly about tags and using wrong tags or incomplete things and so forth, another example real quick is when Trump was out on January 6th giving his talk before they went over to the Capitol building, they edited out quiet and peaceful ceremony at the Capitol building. When they reported it on the left in all the news articles, you won't find one that had that in it. And he said it. He said it. So my only point is in all this and on this education bill is we've got to have legislators be responsible enough to be complete in the message that they're putting out there. They can defend their position, and the Republicans can defend theirs, Democrats can defend theirs, but you can't constantly put out something that is half truth or no truth to illustrate your point. All we do is get people more divisive, more confused, more angry. And in reality, these two factions, the Republicans and the Democrats, could be bringing people together. They did so just as was mentioned earlier in our discussion about the Children's Bill of Rights or the Parents' Bill of Rights. They had a huge bipartisan support of that. So it can be done, although it doesn't happen very often. And I'm just tired of this constant mislabeling, half-labeling, or improperly labeling and illustrating things that just serve a purpose but don't tell the truth. What do you guys think about all that?
You left out he ordered the National Guard.
Yes, he did. He did. You're right. And Pelosi said no. So,
well, I think, yes, and that may have been true,
And you make that point. I don't say that to say this side's right and the other side's wrong. Just as you said, Michael, on history of the slavery, the whole subject on slavery, tell the complete story. And we can't seem to get our legislators to do that. Maybe we should go to Washington and straighten them out on that, all of us. But I'm tired of it just never being anywhere close to the complete truth.
Right.
All right.
What do you think, Michael?
Well, I agree with you. It's never close to the complete truth, but it's never close to the complete truth because historically, like we said, it's always been white men telling the story. That's why it's never been close to the truth. So we need to diversify.
Well, white men do a whole lot of good, by the way. I just want to chime in and make that clear. I mean, like the founding of the country.
That's kind of a weak point to make, Mr. Solution, because by all the definition standards, the founding fathers, if we had to look at them today, they would all be registered sex offenders. These were all a bunch of criminals who were a bunch of raping women and murdering and killing people. So these weren't the most honorable men in the world. So for you to say they did some good thing, they started the country, they started it on the backs of other people.
Well, I guess
that's like
you have
saying,
to.
It's like saying Charles Manson did some good things because he wrote a couple of cool songs.
No. I think that is an improper parallel. The thing is that one has to be judged according to that particular time. And, of course, I don't think you would want anyone to judge you 100 years from now by their standards. So I think when everything is looked at on the aggregate, they did do some wonderful things. I've actually read some of their writings, by the way. I don't know if you have. It stands to this day. So I stand by my original statement.
All right, gentlemen.
And
go ahead.
And, Michael, I agree with a number of things you say, but correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't say this to be disrespectful, to be respectful. You're always making it sound like the anger is nothing but all the whites did all the bad things to all the blacks. And we know that just isn't true. There were a lot of people of different races that helped the blacks, that
right.
fortified the blacks, that reinforced the blacks, that embraced unbelievable inventions and creations of the blacks. That is the other part of the story, Michael, I never hear you talk about. I understand your anger, but if you agree, we need to get to the whole picture of the history. It can't just be the negative, angry parts on either side. It's got to be the plus parts on both sides as well. That's how we start to pull people together and say, you know what, we're not that much apart. Maybe our skin color is different, but we think a lot alike. We do a lot alike. We've all done some wonderful things that we can be proud of. I don't hear that going on, and I don't think you do either based on what you're saying, and that needs to happen. That's what I wanted to say.
All right, gentlemen. Let's move on. But, Bruce, what would you like to bring to the table this week?
Well, you asked me, and I brought up the thing about the Don't Say Gay bill, and, you know, and I kind of beat that up a little bit on the completeness of it. So I will pass the baton on to somebody else.
Yeah, Mr. Solutions, do you have something you would like to bring for the table for us to discuss?
Oh, yes, sir, very much. Thank you, David. I was perusing an article on Kenny G. We all know him, you know, his great music. And he's paying $40,000 a month to his ex-wife, and he's petitioning the court, family court, to get that overturned because he said his wife is working. And also his ability to earn was greatly curtailed as a result of the COVID crisis, the shutdown of the economy. So I think one of the things that can be drawn from that, and I think men need to seriously consider it, is that really with our current laws, men have no rights. And if you're in a good marriage, wonderful, God bless you. But you're in that marriage at the mercy of your wife because all she has to do is go to court and, you know, take everything you have. And if you're a man in your 50s or maybe a little bit above, that can be devastating. So I think men need to really peruse that particular concern. Now, they tell women to stash away money just in case, you know, for a rainy day or if she has to escape or whatever. But men need to think about doing that also. So I just throw that out there to the panel. Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Solution, I agree with you 1,000% on that. I do not understand why a woman, especially here in my state of California, where a woman's entitled to half of everything you have once you guys get a divorce. Because the word they use is accustomed, meaning the woman can say, hey, I'm accustomed to this certain lifestyle when I was married to you. We're divorced now. I need to continue that lifestyle. And I think that's a horrible argument because when I go to McDonald's, I'm accustomed to getting a Big Mac. When I leave McDonald's, they don't owe me free Big Macs forever because I was accustomed to it while I was in there. So I totally agree with you, Mr. Solution. The laws are just horrible for men when it comes to marriage. It makes men not even want to get married, to be honest with you. So, yeah, we need to break those laws. I agree with you on that.
Just one codicil to what you said. Thank you, by the way. It's not half. It's more like two-thirds. And I tell you where the additional amount comes in. Because what happens is the alimony, of course, and also the attorney fees, which can be massive and oftentimes are. The man is often demanded, I'm trying to search for the right term here, required to pay the woman's attorney fees also. And in fact, I'm in communication with attorneys all the time of various professions. And one of the things that one attorney was pointing out is that all men need a prenuptial agreement. And I should say a personal prenuptial agreement because the marriage license is a prenuptial agreement. But what he was pointing out is you need a prenuptial agreement to avoid alimony and him. And him represented his attorney fees. So anyway, yeah, you're right, and I would just say it's more of two-thirds than one-half. Thank you.
Darius, you're a married man. What do you think?
I've long held the belief that this law needs to be revisited. The problem is if any politician, especially male politicians, brought that up, he'd be committing political suicide. So that would never happen. But I will say this. I think that whatever my wife and I build together, while we're together, if we don't make it, should be split. Whatever I had before I met her, whatever she had before she met me, and whatever she earns after me and whatever I earn after her. I don't believe in alimony. I'm sorry, guys. That's hogwash to me. You don't get paid the rest of your life because you married me for a period of your life. That's bull crap. and you don't deserve to be supported because you were once my wife. I think you deserve a fair portion of what we've amassed together while we're together. But me paying you for the rest of your life just because you once held the title of Mrs. Glasgow is bull crap, and they need to do away with it. and then back to what Mr. Solution said, it's definitely more than half because many times they give the wife the house. So she gets that, and she gets half or alimony on top of that. So that's more than half. And if they have children, she's going to get child support on top of that. And the child support oftentimes far exceeds the amount that is required to raise a child. So, yeah, it's never really half. It's always more than half. Mrs. Solution was correct on that. But, yeah, Michael, I think we need to do away with that altogether. And you know what else we would have? We would have a lot less divorces, too. Because a lot of women, and I hate to say it, and I'm not trying to paint this with a broad brush because I love women. Women are beautiful, and most of them are good intentioned. But you do have a lot of women, and I know it's more prevalent out there where you are, Michael, that will get married because they see a financial opportunity, not because they love someone and want to build a life with them. And that if we did away with that alimony aspect and that half aspect, then we would probably do away with a lot of these frivolous marriages and divorces, unfounded claims for divorce.
Right. And just to give you guys the quick stats, if you don't have them, and I encourage you to read the Kenny G article, but 70 to 80% of divorces are brought by women. And when they have an education, it's 90%. So, and oftentimes those educations don't yield enough money to really pay for the education. A lot of women are in deep debt out of having taken out student loans.
Well, yeah, I hate to be bold.
Can I add something, Michael?
Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, I can tell you from real-life experience that even in arbitration, a very famous arbitrator that I know, he sat me down, looked me square in the eyes, and he said it's not about fairness. It's about processing. And the women, more times than not, and I said, really? More? And he said, a lot more times than not, will get a lot more. The courts favor the women over the men. That's him telling me that.
All right, gentlemen. Let me jump in with something because one of our listeners wanted to call in, a young gentleman. And his question is, should men enforce or make it a need that men can charge women with assault charges, especially in domestic abuse? Because it's always men getting arrested for domestic abuse when most of it is caused by women. So do you believe that men should get together and change the law so that domestic abuse is both husband and wife? What do you think about that, Darius?
Well, there is spousal domestic abuse charges. Men can file those charges just as well as women. The problem is you don't see it a lot because men just they don't look at it as being a very masculine thing to charge a woman for hitting them. That's a societal issue, as how it makes a man look that he had to call the cops because his wife was hitting him. But it does happen and it can happen. And actually, I experienced it. I didn't call the cops, but you do have some women who will initiate violence just so that they can try to get the other person in trouble. Because they know if they call the cops, that person hit me or touched me, that they could actually go to, go be sent to jail. Well, in this particular instance, I had something like that happened. Not with my wife now, thank God. I wouldn't be here. But I had, I was attacked. And I didn't call the police. I just kind of restrained her, but she ended up calling the police because she was so angry at me, she wanted to get me sent to jail. Well, She called the police, and once the police got there, she told them, I didn't say a word, I sat quietly. I was prepared to go to jail because I figured that was going to happen. But once she told them what happened, she admitted out of her own mouth that she attacked me, she assaulted me, and the most I did was try to hold her down. And they actually took her to jail. So it happens, David. Just like I said, men just don't report it for fear of being appearing to be masculine.
Hey, and Darius, right. Just to piggyback off of what you're saying, Darius, I like you, and not my current relationship, my previous relationship, physically she attacked me, but I ended up going to jail. The police came and took me to jail. My relationship now, fortunately, me and my wife have never gone to the extremes, and hopefully we never have to go to the extremes of a physical altercation. But I made it clear to her, if she ever lifts her hand at me, I'm calling the police, and she is going to jail. I don't care about you calling me soft and a wussy and you're a punk for having a woman. I don't care. If my wife hits me, she is going to jail. No question.
All right. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Well, thanks, David. I'm just thinking about the rules and the laws around me in the states that I'm familiar with in the Midwest. None of them say woman to man only. They all say assault of either direction. But I agree with, I think, Darius and Michael and others that have said men tend not to report it near as much for a variety of reasons. But legally, they have the same ground to stand on as women, don't they? I mean, do you guys know there's states that's just women, if they're attacked by men, and men have no recourse if it's the other way around? Question.
Some not to my knowledge, Bruce.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's either way, right?
Yeah,
yes.
It's either way.
Supposedly.
From what I know, Bruce. Yeah, it's both
right,
of them,
supposedly. You're correct. Supposedly.
I do know, though, in some states, whoever makes that phone call, somebody has to go to jail that particular day.
Yeah.
So I do know that's the case in a lot of states.
Yeah.
If I just may chime in, the law is neutral in most instances, but there is a bias. You know, we humans can inject ourselves in it. So with the conditioning of men and the bias of the system, as the gentlemen have said before me, it tends to favor the woman. But, you know, there are things men can do if they just take precautions. Like one of the gentlemen said, someone needs to mute if you're not talking. I hear some background. If you know, a wife can be informed, or a girlfriend, if she raises a hand in violence against a man, that he will call the police. And it has a lot to do with informing women that they have accountability and responsibility. But I often say, you know, in searching for solutions regarding this, is to people keep a separate domicile. And if they keep a separate domicile, that really, until they really, 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 really get to know each other, that greatly lessens the opportunity for violence and frustration that leads to, you know, people laying their hands on each other, is keep separate domiciles. And the only pushback I've gotten on that is the affordability issue, which is another issue, but I think it is a viable solution for, you know, because if you get into an altercation or an argument, I should say, verbal altercation, you know, sweetie, I'll see you later, or I'll check with you midweek or whatever. You know, because one does have to recognize that people get frustrated. And so I think that would greatly mitigate any problem if people kept separate domiciles.
Well, I hear you on that solution, Mr. Solution, and I agree with you. But some women, and I don't want to sound like a male chauvinist, but some women just want confrontation. I dated women that no matter how hard I try to walk away, They'll get in your face and poke at you and poke at you and try to force you to react. So it's not that easy, Mr. Solution. It depends on the woman you're dating.
Hey, David, can I ask a quick question of our friends tonight?
Yeah, go ahead, Bruce. You're good.
Okay, on this subject, and the fact that I think I heard Mr. Solution or one of us say, or it might have been Michael, that the amount of single men of the, kind of the marrying type is really going down. It's like almost 65% now don't even get married. So my question to all of you, jump in with anything you can think of. What are the other factors that are making the younger male, the guys, not want to get married anymore, other than the one we just talked about? Give me some other reasons why it's happening.
Bruce, it's definitely, absolutely, positively social media. Social media plays a huge role in that. Because if you're a 20-year-old man and right now and you see a 20-year-old woman that you're attracted to, that 20-year-old woman's got about 10,000 Instagram followers, which means she's got 10,000 other men vying for her attention. So how are you going to get her attention? When you and I were growing up, Bruce, like I said before, if we wanted a chick, it was maybe two or three guys in the neighborhood we were battling against. But now you're battling against 10,000 eyeballs who's looking at this young lady, so you're never going to get her attention. And that goes the other way. If it's a really attractive young man, he's got 10,000 young women who are trying to get his attention. How's he going to choose who to settle down with? He's not. He's going to try to just run through all 10,000 of them if he can. He's not looking to settle down. So to answer your question, short answer is social media. Social media for sure.
Yeah.
What do you think, Darius?
I agree with you, Michael, about social media. With what you said, but also because social media gives us options. There's no incentive for a young man to get married right now. I mean, women are giving everything for nothing. So,
you're going to be in trouble with that, Darius.
Yeah, maybe, but it's the truth. If a woman is willing to give you everything without you having to have any accountability, any financial responsibility, or any type of obligation, then there's no incentive for you to get married. And you have social media where if one woman says, no, I have standards, I'm not giving myself away unless I'm married, then he'll just swipe to the next woman who will. And there are many of them that are willing to do that without it. So there's no incentive for men to get married anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I just have a quick point, if I may. OkCupid did a study. What they determined was that 80% of the men don't show up on women's radar. In other words, 20% of the men are appealing to the women. And by the way, there's a dichotomy here, where a woman can be a genetic celebrity, just pretty much born with what she has to attract a man. It's the same way with a man. A man has to acquire resources. He has to become the best version of himself. In first world countries today, women are not fit and friendly. And most of them, as you guys are pointing out, due to social medias, but just a lack of morals, they're not faithful. So they don't have the feminine, friendly, and faithful characters. And what a lot of younger men are doing is going to other cultures where there is more of a gender role distinction and where women genuinely appreciate men. So I think men speaking out and holding women accountable and themselves accountable will, kind of help turn this ship around.
Yeah, and
go ahead, Bruce.
All right,
let me just
gentlemen.
Add something real quick after
you got
Mr.
30
Solution.
Seconds.
And to complicate it all, I hear from a number of studies, a lot of women, more than two-thirds, are very frustrated with the whole dating situation. So that lay that on top of all of this to make it even more confusing.
All right, you've been listening to The Man's Voice, and we're here every Sunday at 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time and 3 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. All right. We'll see you back again next week, guys. Have
All
a great
right.
Week.
God bless. Have a great
God
weekend.
Bless. Yeah, everybody have a blessed week and a safe weekend, what's left of it.